First of all, thank you all for being here. I don't take your time lightly. I know time is a very valuable asset. I always want to make sure I provide a huge amount of value between myself and the other coaches. So today I thought it would be really useful to dive into our assessment process. And while you may never use our assessment process, understanding how we assess you when you're coming in here actually could be a very powerful way for you to start understanding the process of getting in shape, the process of transforming your body, whether it be adding muscle, losing fat, optimizing the way you move, optimizing for longevity. All of them start with a foundational baseline assessment, right? So we coach coaches, and when you coach a coach, the first thing you want to articulate to the coach is an understanding of all the potential variables. Because when you walk into my life, let's say this is Steve's friend, he walks into my gym and he goes, "Ben, I want to work with you." As a coach, I want to have an insight into every single variable that I can, because not everything's important, but everything could be important at some point, right? So we put everything on a timeline. Let's say the timeline is 1 year, 2 years, 10 years. At some point, every single variable in your physiological reality, in your biochemical body, could become important. It may be not important now, it may not be important. You may think it's important, you may think it's not important. But the reality is, the more we know, the more we can make educated decisions. So the first thing we start with everybody is a very, very in-depth assessment. You guys all did it coming in. You did an intake form. Many of you did a metabolic assessment. Not everyone does a metabolic assessment. We usually only give the metabolic assessment to people who are having metabolic issues. So if you're having some metabolic challenges, whether that be gut health or energy or hormones, you may have done a metabolic assessment as well. It's long, so that's why we don't give it to everybody. The intake form, you guys all know, is long. And the metabolic assessment, I think, is like 75 questions. We're working on something else now that's called the Human Optimization Scorecard, which is, I hope all of you will be interested in. I'll explain a little bit to you today. But we'll get into all that in some detail. And knowing all of the variables that go into an assessment is important, because when you're embarking on your fitness journey for the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years, knowing all the potential variables is a much more empowering way to come at fitness. So many people look at fitness through a straw. They say, "Hey, it's this one thing. It must be, you know, it must be my nutrition, or it must be my gut health, or it must be my biceps, or whatever," right? Could be any of these number of things. It must be my genetics. But the reality is, people who speak in binary terms, like it's this or that, typically don't have any idea what they're talking about. So as coaches, we're trying to have a deeper understanding of all the things that are going in and how we can ultimately influence them. So a simple way to think about the way we assess you guys, certainly the Human Optimization Scorecard is going to be built out this way. There's really four subcategories that we look at. And the subcategory, and there's only two that are super important to you. And the other two I'll explain as well, but two that are super important to you. It's physical capability and metabolic capability, right? You guys may have heard me talk about this in the past on a podcast or something like that. But so when someone comes in, what are they physically capable of? And what are they metabolically capable of? Those are the two primary things I'm looking at, because ultimately, if we're trying to transform your body, I need to understand what is your body capable of doing right now today, right? And then ultimately, where are the deficiencies? And the other side of that equation is, what is this person metabolically capable of? Meaning, what is their metabolism able to do as far as energy production, taking food we eat, turning it into energy? And at what rate does your metabolism produce energy? And if there's some potential limitations or blocks in the way, what are those potential blocks or limitations? And that's ultimately what we're trying to do. So if we think of a person of your age demographic with your specific goals, we're trying to get you to the highest level of physical standard, the highest level of metabolic standard for someone of your age and of your objectives. So if you're someone who wants to be 6% body fat versus 15% body fat, those may be very different physical realities and metabolic realities, right? So we're looking to say, okay, what is the standard to which you choose to hold yourself, or you desire to hold yourself to? So as coaches, let's start on the physical side. So when we're looking at physical capability, the first thing we look at above all is, and we talked about this last week, first thing we look at above all is, what is your posture, right? So posture in my mind is not just how do you stand, shoulders back, chest up. You know, that's not posture. At some level, it's an expression of posture. But posture, ultimately, another word that goes in line with posture is what we call structural balance. So how balanced are you front to back, left to right? And are there any disparities or things that are causing you to ultimately, when we stack movement on top of the structural balance, create dysfunction, right? So if I'm standing there in the anatomical position, what is my body expressing to me right now? What is my body telling me? Is there a slight lateral bend? Is my head tilted one way? Is one foot rotated? Is one hip rotated? All those things are going to, in a standing position, the ideal circumstances, we want to be structurally balanced, because as we start to stack movement on top of that, movement progresses from standing to walking. Well, actually, say standing and breathing first, to walking, then to lunging, then maybe to squatting, then maybe to sprinting, right? So you start stacking these different levels of movement on top. And if there's a dysfunction at a stationary position, well, obviously, when we start doing things above head, we start doing bench presses, start doing lunges and squats, that dysfunction becomes even more exaggerated. It certainly won't regress. It'll actually become more exaggerated. So we're looking for, as coaches, we're looking to say, okay, well, can this person stand in the anatomical position with some semblance of structural balance? And if they don't, then we have to take action to start correcting it. And the means of correcting structural imbalance is obviously exercise, right? So it can be some combination of mobility, stability, and skill, right? So those are your three kind of levers that we pull when it comes to optimization of physical capability: mobility, stability, skill. So what is the mobility? Can this person access the range of motion at all? Or are they too weak to get there? Now, how many of you would say some part of your body is tight? Hips, back, hamstrings. Yeah. So how many of you have heard the statement that tightness is a sign of weakness? Does anyone know that? Most people think tightness is just tightness, like it's genetic or I'm just tight. No, in reality, tightness is a sign of weakness. And stretching tightness doesn't make tightness go away, right? The way we make tightness get better is actually by strengthening areas, strengthening strengthening by position, I guess, would be a simple way to express it. So all strength expressed is positionally relevant, meaning if I'm strong in one position of a bench press, it doesn't necessarily equate to being strong at all other positions of a bench press, as an example. So as we're assessing you, what we're looking for, guys, is if you're standing, I think we talked about this last week also, if you're standing or sitting, we're looking for a vertical alignment. So your ear, your shoulder, your hip, your knee, and your ankle should be vertically aligned when you're standing up. And if they're not, then we have some imbalance right off the bat. Then we're starting to look at, does your rib cage stack directly over your pelvis, right? So your rib cage should be a relatively vertically aligned structure relative to your pelvis. And so some people start to have these pelvic orientations that shift, right? We have an anterior pelvic tilt. We have a posterior pelvic tilt. Most people are going to be anterior, which is mean you're kind of sticking your butt out. So if anyone's ever had a lower back tightness, a lower back issue, or tight hamstrings, raise your hand. Anyone ever had that? Tight hamstrings? Low? Yeah, right. So why is that so common in our society? It's not because all of you guys have short hamstrings. Like I have tight hamstrings genetically. No, the reason you have that is because something in your pelvis is weak, usually due to sitting too much, right? So if we sit too much, our hamstrings start to become tight due to the pelvic instability that comes up. So what happens is our hip flexors in the front start to shorten. Hip flexors in the front shorten, our pelvis starts to go to tilt. It starts to tip. So the tightness in hamstrings is more an expression of weakness through both the hamstrings and the hip flexors. So rather than thinking, oh, I'm tight, I should stretch it, you should start thinking, hey, I'm tight, what am I not contracting well enough? So think about that differently. I'm not saying stretching is useless or irrelevant. What I'm saying is the fastest path to correcting structural imbalance or any type of weakness is not stretching. It's contraction 100% of the time. So if you guys haven't listened to my recent podcast with Greg Roscoff, probably 3 weeks ago, it's a phenomenal podcast. Phenomenal podcast. Greg is just brilliant when it comes to explaining movement and muscles. He's the GOAT, in my opinion. He's incredible when it comes to understanding structure and how the body works and functions. So for coaches, that's how we're assessing you right off the bat. We're looking, okay. And you guys, most of you guys have gone through this program, have experienced what we call the Big Ten exercises, right? So many of you would have started with the Big Ten program, which is ultimately squats, lunges, deadlifts, sometimes two variations of deadlifts, lying leg curls, bench press or some type of pressing movement. It could be dumbbells, could be push-ups. Overhead presses are always there. Pull-ups or pull-downs are always there. Lateral raises are often there. We have a couple that are interchangeable at the end. Lying leg curls, I think I said. And then you could include some auxiliary stuff, biceps, triceps, calves. But you have the main compound lifts that you're all familiar with. And we're really assessing your physical capability in those lifts. Here's the important thing. We don't assess those lifts because they're the best. They're not necessarily, no exercise, in my opinion, is good or bad. What they are is a standard, right? They're a standard to which we should all hold ourselves. So we should all be physically capable of performing the big eight really, really, really well. Here's why. When you can squat effectively, you know, call it full range of motion, ass to ankles, or as close to that as possible, I know definitively that you can also hack squat. You can also leg press. You can also do any other leg exercises that are required of you with a relatively high degree of competency. What's the difference between a hack squat and a squat? Same movement. One movement requires internal stability. One movement requires external stability or has the opportunity to take advantage of external stability. A hack squat is externally stabilized, right? We're leaning into a bench. A leg press is externally stabilized. We're leaning into a bench. A squat is internally stabilized completely other than the floor, but we're creating stability with our trunk and spine, with our pelvic musculature, and with our legs. We're creating leg drive. That's where your stability comes from. That's a much more neurologically complex exercise. Your brain has to coordinate and orchestrate a lot more stuff, right? So that's much more complex. So if you're good at squatting and lunging, 100% of the time, you're going to be great at everything else when it comes to legs. So that gives you an example of why we use the exercises in the Big Eight as integral in long-term positive health outcomes, positive movement outcomes. Another example, exercise pairing, overhead pressing and pull-downs or pull-ups, the ability to get your hand in, or arm into this position, right? So getting basically your bicep to your ear is integral in shoulder health, in back development, in pec development, and ultimately just maintaining spinal function. So if you don't have, does anyone have a problem getting into that position? Does it feel tight when you do that? Do you feel like you have to like lean back? Right. So try to do it with a straight arm. And if you can't do it, most people go, well, my shoulders are tight or my traps are tight. Right. Try it. See what feels tight. Most people are going to feel it in their trap. Try to keep your arm perfectly straight. There you go. Yeah. So most, it's going to start feeling up here in the trap, right? Most people. So you shouldn't feel it in your trap. Doing it correctly, your trap will engage, but really you want to kind of like feel it pulling down away from your ear. It can go back and go up. It can do all those things, but you want to have access to all of them. So when we think of mobility, it's really the ability to access these positions. Now, the unfortunate reality is that some people over the age of 30, 35, 40 start to develop what's called osteophytes, which is calcification of the bone, which can sometimes get in the way of these ranges of motion. So it's not always a muscular thing, but most often it's a muscular thing. So we want to be able to get into these positions, because if we can't get into a position, certainly we can't train a muscle from that position. And deficiencies in mobility are what cause injuries. So while I'm not a massive advocate of excessive amounts of stretching absolutely holds its place to train your nervous system to get into that position without any resistance first, or any position, and then learn to contract from that position. With me? So as coaches, we're looking at, okay, what can this person do? And there's really four areas of physical capability that we're looking at, right? There's four areas of the body. So we're looking at the foot and ankle. We're looking at, obviously, the knee. We're looking at, so there's five, I guess. I don't usually include the knee. We're looking at the hip. We're looking at the spine. We're looking at the shoulder girdle. So the knee I usually take away, believe it or not. Why do I take the knee away? How many of you have knee pain? Yeah. So about 99 times out of 100, maybe even more than that, knee pain has nothing to do with the knee. Knee pain has to do with the foot and ankle or the hip. So sometimes, and I won't say never, but sometimes it's the knee. But most of the time, 99 times out of 100, it's not the knee. It's the foot and it's the hip. So the knee is where the pain expresses, but the foot dysfunction, hip dysfunction is actually what it causes knee discomfort. So as coaches, we tend to spend a little bit more time on your foot and on your hip. And if those don't correct it, then we'll look at the knee. And sometimes there's some things we can immediately see with the knee, but usually it's not a matter of a problem at the knee. It's usually a problem at the hip or the foot and ankle. So if you've ever gone through any of our assessment programs, oftentimes, well, many of our programs, even now for you, will include walking as part of your fitness program. Does anyone have walking as part of their fitness program? Okay. So why is walking a part of a fitness program for men that aren't old? I often hear people say, walking's for old people. No, it's not. Why is walking not for old people? Walking is the second most functional thing we do as human beings. And if we lose the ability to walk, or we walk in any way dysfunctionally. So if we put walking on a continuum and we say perfect walking is 100, we have to rank you on a scale of 0 to 100 as far as how well you walk. And ultimately, the walking is an expression of hip mobility, spinal mobility, rib positioning, pelvic positioning, so many different foot function, ankle function, you know, hip mobility, so many things stack into walking. And so when I watch you walk, I can tell you with extreme accuracy how well you do other exercises. I can tell you how well you bench press. I can tell you how well you overhead press. I can tell you how well you do pull-ups by watching you walk. People are like, what? Yes. So your structure is telling you an enormous story. And the way you move and control that structure is telling an enormous story when you learn how to look at it. Right. So I said this last week also, the way us as coaches look at a body is going to be completely different than the way you look at a body. So we're looking for like micro movements that you wouldn't even notice. I'll give an example. About a year ago, I went to a boxing match here. One of my clients flew in, went to a boxing match, and he's a professional boxer. And he was watching this boxing match and saying, oh, look how he did this. And he dipped his left shoulder and he did this and he rotated this way and hit him this way. And I was like, I didn't see any of it. His brain processed boxing at such a rate that like these guys were moving. I could see them hitting each other, but I couldn't see the nuance of their movement because it was just in my brain. It was new. It was so fast. It was so new. I was like, I didn't see him do that. When I watch exercise, that's what's happening. Like it's like almost like things slow down. I can go, oh, your shoulder blade lifted by a centimeter, or your knee shot out by a millimeter. And we could see these little nuanced movements that most people simply won't know to look for or know or would be able to notice. So when we're assessing you physically, this is the depth that we want to be able to assess. Now, here's the nuance, right? Or here's the challenge. In order for us to assess your movement, what do we require to be able to see you? How many of you are committed to sending videos to your coach every day or at least every week? Has anyone given your coach a hard time about sending videos? This is the number one feedback we get from coaches. So, you know, probably 10% of the people that come to this program don't get results. And the number one feedback, and it drives me crazy, right? So all of us as coaches take a high degree of responsibility for your success. And so I'd say probably 10%, maybe less than that now, but probably 10% of people don't get results. And you know, the number one reason that, or number one correlate we see, they didn't send training videos. Because I think one of the single greatest things we can do to improve your ability to get results, not just right now, but for the rest of your life, is teaching you how to move effectively, right? So this sounds harsh, but when I go into a gym anywhere in the world, most people, if you ask them how well they move or how well they're, you know, how's your training? That's pretty good. And I'll look at them and I'll go, on a scale of 1 to 100, you're a 6. Yeah. Like most people are just so terrible. And, you know, someone who's really good, 85, 90, right? Like nobody's 100, very few people, maybe like a professional athlete, right? But most people in the gym are so poor that they're leaving so much results on the table. And yet they're like, oh, you know, I'm not really getting the results I want. My genetics aren't so great. You know, I'm not eating very well. I'm like, all that is horseshit. It's complete horseshit. You move like crap, your metabolism is broken. So we invest a little bit of time in the first 3 months of our coaching together, improving in the way you move and improving your metabolism, not just now, but for the rest of your life. You're empowered with this increased capability, physically and metabolically. Okay, I'm going to pause right there. Who's got questions? Steve, Andrew, anything you guys want to add?
This is perfectly timed. I posted about this in the Facebook group today for the coaches, which is nice. Awesome. And yeah, that's one of the reasons why I keep doing the weightlifting stuff I do, because I found that ever since I started exploring these different joint ranges and different movement patterns, everything got better. Like I remember a long time ago when I was only doing like heavy lifting and everything started seizing up. And again, to my own fault, because I wasn't worried thinking about other things. I was just like, man, lift heavy. So I would just do that. And then I would take a walk. And if you miss a step, and like I'd be like, oh, and everything would just hurt. And like you start seeing the dysfunction kind of like build up. It's incredible.
That's actually a great dovetail into what I wanted to talk about next is linear. So this is going to hurt everyone's feelings, but this is the reality. Bodybuilding is dysfunctional. Building muscle is dysfunctional. No question. You're literally creating dysfunction. Every time you isolate muscles, you're creating dysfunction. Doesn't make it a bad thing, but you need to learn to integrate isolated movements, which build muscle, and integrated movements, which integrate multiple muscles and multiple joints. Like Steve is saying, Steve's masterful at Olympic lifting. And Olympic lifting is a very integrated movement. It's very dynamic. It's very, very complex. It's very athletic in nature, right? It's all the muscles at once. And so if we just trained like a bodybuilder or like someone trying to build their body, at some point you're going to become tight and very physically limited. Now, tightness is not necessarily correlated with bodybuilding training, because I was extremely mobile as a professional bodybuilder, because I knew how to train, because I trained my end range positions, because I spent time in those end ranges. But if you're not conscious of accessing the end range of motion and staying there with stability, the range will absolutely get shorter, because the stronger you get, the harder it is to control the end ranges, right? If I'm deadlifting 800 pounds, the likelihood of me like really going really, really slow through the end range is very small, right? If I'm bench pressing 500 pounds, most people aren't going to stop at the bottom of the rep, contract their pecs, and use the pec from that position. They're going to use momentum. So they start to develop these deficiencies at the end of the range. So this is important. Again, I want to pause there and let the coaches or you guys ask questions or comments, but I thought it was a good segue. Anything else, Stevie? Andrew?
No, nothing for me over here. I like hearing you talk about it, because there's also, being that everybody's on, everybody's digital right now, there's so many like crappy Instagram influencers out there spewing information. Like, yeah,
It's
you've seen them, right?
noise.
Yeah, exactly. And it's all about like these postures, these different things, this not being bad. It's just a bunch of jargon, right? That when you're saying it, it's nice to hear, because you're clearing it up.
Thanks, man. And yeah, so this is a man, I fight with this a lot. I watch Instagram once in a while as well. And what I find is the people who talk the loudest get the most attention. And it's often the people that talk the loudest have no fucking idea what they're talking about. And you're sitting there just like, and they've got like, a million people watching the video, and you're like, oh, it's painful, but at the same time, like, I'm not going to get in a pissing match with an idiot. And I'm just like, I'm just going to let it fly. And it feels, I don't know, it feels like I should take responsibility for it, but I'm just like, I'm not going to get into a pissing match with this. I'd rather just help you guys, people who are committed to doing really well, rather than like, yeah, I mean, it's really all, so many people are so bad at what they're doing. Again, I don't want to put anybody down, but, sometimes it's frustrating to watch people try to correct exercise and just like, no idea. Listen, I don't even rank myself as being masterful at this stuff, right? And it's always the idea of like, the more you learn, the less you know. And I surround myself with some people who are just like mind-blowingly smart. So there's just always so much more to learn. And I hope you all take that mindset as well. Like, I've been doing this for a long time, pretty good at a lot of stuff. But man, there's so much more that I'm always learning. Andrew, anything you want to tag onto that?
You're spot on, man. I've said it on previous calls. My body, I guess both sides of it, my body never felt more banged up. And I also never felt more capable when I was doing Olympic lifting and including that in my training. And for some people here, like, if you can't get into a front squat, like, you might just start with kettlebell swings and goblet squats. That might be where you start and then expand outward from that, right? But, a chapter in life for me now is, you guys know I talk about jiu-jitsu, and jujitsu is the same thing. It is complete dysfunction. You're trying to destroy the other person's joints the entire time. And so in training, right, like it's just funny to think about. But yeah, spot on, Ben.
Anyone else have questions?
Ben, I have a question about walking.
Yep, shoot, man.
So this is kind of started happening a little bit like last 3 years. And so like every morning when I get up and I put my feet down, it's kind of like it hurts to walk for a couple steps.
Like, and then like it gets feels like the bottom of your feet are bruised, or what does it feel?
Yeah, like sore, bruised.
The bottom of your feet?
And it's like...
I lost you, Cole.
Say it one more time, sir.
I said, is it the bottom of your feet?
Yes, sir.
Are you wearing barefoot shoes?
I have splay shoes. So yeah, I'll do barefoot generally about 5 to 8 hours a day. And then some days I'll wear my sandals around the house.
Yeah, that's gotta be it, bro. So man, when I wear barefoot shoes and I walk a lot, it feels the same way. It feels like the bottom of my feet are bruised.
Okay. Did you notice too, when you're like heavier, that like that was a thing also?
I find that well, it depends on my body fat. If I'm super lean, then everything hurts because the bottom of your feet is fat pads.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're not super lean, then it's fine. Yeah, I'll tell you what, man, like pay attention to how you're walking, because one of the biggest problems in our society is we're used to having these really thick, really cushy soles on the bottom of our feet. We get lazy, right? When there's no reason to like pay attention to how you walk, because you got these really soft cushions, your feet just get lazy. They get dormant. They just get inactive. So as soon as you take away that big soft sole, now all of a sudden you actually have to pay attention to how you're hitting the floor, how you're striking the floor. And if you try walking barefoot on concrete for a while, you'll learn really quickly how to walk softly and like cushion your landing a little bit with your feet, rather than like most people, it's like heel strike, slap, right? So it's like my heels are bruised and my forefoot is bruised from just like mindless walking.
Okay. No, I also noticed too, when I switched over to those splay shoes, that I was able to actually get better definition in my calves, because I was actually pressing off through the correct side of my feet.
Yeah,
totally. Which was surprising to me, but I mean, I'll take that.
Yeah, I've never heard of splay. I'll look into it. Oh, those are cool.
They're a cheap version versus like the Zero shoes. So yeah, $70 for someone that looks like a Converse.
Yeah, these are cool looking. Yeah, kids too. That's cool. Anyone else have questions? So if we break down walking just a little bit. Some little pieces of advice for you guys. So every time you walk, now remember, not all steps are created equal, right? 10,000 steps a day is a very arbitrary goal, but it is a goal. And it's good to be able to check boxes. But me walking from here to the refrigerator, rather than me walking like, 5,000 steps in my neighborhood or in a park, very different body posture, very different intention, very different rate, very different, continuity of heart rate. But so one of the things I'd like for you all to take out of this is when you're walking later today, tomorrow, just pay attention to what you feel, pay attention to what your body is telling you. I'll give you a few cues to think about. Anyone have shoulder pain? Okay. So it's my opinion, and this is an opinion, that a large majority of shoulder pain starts with poor posture, right? Starts with poor spinal mobility, specifically through the thoracic spine. And the number one intervention or the top two interventions for spinal mobility are breathing and walking, right? It's not stretching. It's not chiropractic. It's breathing and walking. So if you can breathe effectively and deeply into your, like we spoke about last week, into your diaphragm, expanding your rib cage, that'll start to change your shoulder. but specifically when you're walking and learning to breathe intentionally while you're walking, using your diaphragm, sending the air down into your lower lobes of your lungs, expelling your air all the way. What I want you to picture is when I'm inhaling. So if my fingers represent my rib cage, when I'm inhaling, it's going like this. So the ribs open this way. So this is my front of you is here. The ribs are opening this way, but they're also opening this way. So we open this way and this way, right? So I want those ribs to really just like, I want them to expand and contract. So you're literally letting them open up and then close and open up and close and just feel it, feel your belly expand, try to breathe into your back. And now making sure when you're breathing that you're not hyperextending or you're not slouching, you're trying to think about, is my rib cage stacked directly over my pelvis? If I was to remove all my skin and muscles, would those things be vertically aligned, like two bowls on top of each other? And if they're not, then you can assume your walking is dysfunctional. So I would pay attention to that. I'd pay attention to letting my arms completely relax and swing at my sides. There shouldn't be tension up here through your arms when you walk. I think people underutilize or underrecognize the value of swinging your arms. What happens when I swing my arms? Look at my spine. What's happening to my spine? It's rotating, right? So I'm getting rotation through all of the vertebral bodies. I'm getting that rotation. So if I rock like this and I'm really rigid, no, there's no rotation. The faster I walk, the more rotation I get. If I break into a jog or a run, I should have slightly more rotation, right? So you're training your body to go through those ranges, and that's a really good thing. So when you're walking, pay attention to how am I breathing? Is my rib cage stacked over my pelvis? Am I swinging my arms? Right? Start there. Another final layer that I'll add in, because there's a lot, is think about walking on one line instead of two. So if you're walking down the middle line of the highway, like the yellow line, try to walk and place both feet, one in front of the other, on that line. So it's not two parallel lines, it's one. And what that's going to do is you're going to find your hips start to sway. Your hips start to go like this. Because if you're walking on two lines, what you'll see, and does anyone ever walk? You probably don't recognize this, but you will after I say this. When you walk, do you notice your head going back and forth? You don't want to walk like that. Your head kind of does this. So if you're doing that, you'll know right off the bat you're walking on two parallel lines. So what you should be doing is walking on one line and your head stays straight, but your hips move, right? So if your hips can't move, then your head will start going like this. So if your head is bobbing side to side, we know right off the bat that your hips are lacking mobility, right? So you're lacking in adduction, typically adduction, abduction of the hips. You don't need to know what that is. But if you're seeing these things happening, bring it up with the coach and say, hey coach, how do I correct this? Because oftentimes it's just a weakness in the adductors that are leading into this like side to side head bob. Okay. So a few key action items for you guys. Who's got a question?
Great information.
Thanks, man. Yeah. So coming back to just like wrapping up the assessment conversation, we talked about breathing last week. For anyone who wasn't there, listen to the audio recording. There's a lot in breathing. Walking is the next assessment we're looking at. And then from there, then we move on to the big eight. So those are kind of your three big components of a muscle intelligence assessment, or really anyone's assessment. How well do you perform these things? And now every exercise you do in these big eight is positionally specific, which means you may be really good at 90 degrees of knee flexion in a squat, but you may suck at 100 degrees. So we're looking at every single inch incrementally at all of these exercises. So we say, where do you have control? Where do you not have control? Okay. So let's say, for example, you do a pull-up and you go all the way to the bottom and you can't pull back out of there. But if you were to stop just before that, you could do 10. Right off the bat, we see a deficiency in your ability to move. So we're going to address that deficiency specifically with an exercise. So pull-up is what we'll call an integrated exercise, right? It requires multiple muscles, multiple joints. We may take one specific joint out of that, or even one specific joint position out of that exercise and isolate it. So as an example, if you're poor from here to here and that first 6 inches or however much of a range it is, we may just train that and just isolate that so you can get better there. And then we reintegrate it back into the system. And now you're more effective at executing one of the big eight exercises. With me? So that's really how we're looking at all this from a physical capability perspective. What do you want to be able to do? What should your age be able to do? and what can you currently do now? And where's the gap, right? How do we bridge the gap? That's really it. But we're really looking at it joint by joint. So you guys understand that. Was that helpful? Is there any questions about that? I'm going to shift over to metabolic capability now, but I want to ask if there's any questions and if that was helpful.
Very helpful.
Good. Was it confusing as shit? And you guys are like, I'm wasting my time. What's this guy talking about?
It was super helpful.
Great. Thanks, Jay. Does anyone, if you guys are afraid to ask the questions or you don't have your video on, you can drop them in the chat box also. I'd love for all of you guys to share any questions you have. It could be for yourself, it could be for somebody else. Now, here's the thing. I'll say one final thing when it comes to assessment. If you have any pain in your body. Now, if there was some type of blunt force injury, like you're in an accident, then pain is part of that, right? But how many of you think that pain should be part of exercise? This is a really interesting thing that not everyone thinks about. Like, exercise shouldn't hurt. Like, no exercise you do should hurt. If it hurts, you're doing it wrong, right? And it may not be wrong relative to the ideal form, but it may be wrong relative to what your body is currently capable of. Awesome, Matt. That's great, man. Yeah. So Matsu, go ahead. Matsu saying hurt and burn are a few different things and people don't always differentiate that. That's for sure true. So if your joints hurt, guys, when you're training, you're probably doing something wrong or you're doing an exercise you shouldn't be doing. So don't be attached to what exercises you do. Be attached to leaving the gym, feeling like you've made progress and not feeling worse than when you went in. Does anyone ever feel worse when they leave than when they go in? Or is anyone afraid of doing certain exercises because of discomfort or pain? It's a reality. I am sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah. I've got a pretty banged up Achilles tendon, or I actually had it repaired last year. Sometimes I'm afraid to go and do like, can I do front squats today? I'm like, let me just try this first before I dive into this. Split squats. Yeah. So tight hips, Sarah, probably right. All right. So I want to be respectful of everyone's time. We got 19 minutes. I want to go through metabolic capability. So if we wrap up physical capability, the objective is I want you guys to be able to run, jump, play, lift, all of it in every different plane, in every different way, without discomfort and with a high degree of physical competency, a high degree of comfort. Now, there's one other thing that's important. If your body weight fluctuates a lot, pain seems like an inevitability. So do your best to not allow your body weight to fluctuate. There's a lot of inflammatory things that happen. There's a lot of changes that happen to your collagen when you fluctuate in body weight. So do your best to not fluctuate a huge amount in body weight. Like if you're coming down in body weight because you want to get down in body weight, plan to stay there. Don't plan to fluctuate, guys. And so one of the reasons why we created this program is because it's not a quick fix, right? I'm not trying to get you guys shredded in 90 days. We can, no question, we can get you shredded, but we're going to do it in a way that allows you to stay lean for life. And that's why we created this program. All right. So when it comes to metabolic capability, we ultimately call metabolic flexibility, but slightly more than that with metabolic capability. Sorry, I get something in. We're really looking at how well does your body take energy from the food you eat and produce energy to participate in life's activities, right? So metabolism is, now this is way more complex than most people think. So I want you to think about, everyone think of the journey that the last meal that you ate took, meaning you consumed it. First, you chose it, right? You chose some food. And that came from somewhere, and that came from a farm, or it came from a factory or somewhere. And so where that food comes from matters. It influences your metabolism. Then you prepared it. That also influences how your body metabolizes it. Then you consumed it. So chewed it, and everyone chews it differently, a different amount. It mixes with your enzymes in your mouth and your stomach, acids, and your microbiome. And everyone, again, is different. Everyone has different levels of enzymes, different levels of acids, different microbiomes. Works its way through the intestine. Maybe it goes through a healthy gut. Maybe it doesn't, meaning a gut wall. So then it interacts with your immune system. Then it interacts with your blood. Then finally, it starts getting into processes through your liver. And then finally starts getting into cells where it's going to be used for something, right? Protein is used for tissue, muscle, collagen, et cetera. Carbs and fats are used for energy primarily, right? So that's metabolism. It's like what happens between the time that I select this food to the time it gets turned into my, either into my body or into energy to do something. There's a lot of stuff that happens along the way. A lot. There's a lot of intermediary steps. And every one of those steps is different between every single person on this call and every single person in this world. And every one of those steps can potentially be a limiting factor for you. It can be a limiting factor that limits your body's ability to take the food that you eat and produce energy effectively. And that's what metabolism is. So when we're assessing your metabolism, we're looking at every step along the way and saying, okay, where is this person deficient, or what is the bottleneck? What is the limiting factor? Sometimes it's something as simple as some vitamins and minerals. Sometimes it's inflammation. Sometimes it's way up here and like, what are they selecting to go into their mouth? Maybe it's the way you prepare your food. Maybe it's the state you're in when you're chewing your food. Maybe you're super stressed out. Maybe you're lacking enzymes or amylase in your mouth. Maybe you're lacking hydrochloric acid, but we're literally looking at everything along that continuum and saying, well, which one's most likely to be the culprit? And then can we test and actually assess which one is the culprit? So we want to look at it from that level of, we look at it from that level of complexity. And so there's a lot of potential stuff that could get in the way. Probably the biggest factors that you all know about are your gut health. Here's the thing that most people don't realize. Do you know that gut health and the immune system are basically the same thing? People talk about those things separately because people say, well, gut health is really important. Do you know why the gut health is important? Because it's the same thing as your immune system. And if your immune system is acting up or kicking up, sorry. Cole, you got something to say or you want to mute you? I'm going to mute you. So gut health and the immune system are massively impacting everything that's happening inside your body, right? But so is sore hormones. So is stress. So is level of activity, right? So we're looking at all those things and saying, okay, where are you deficient and what are the greatest opportunities for you to progress right now?
Nice.
There's a lot. Sorry, go ahead, man. You got something, Stefan? I'm going to mute you. There's a lot that can happen between the time I decide to choose something, consume it, and then what it does in my body. And it's way more complex than we can get into on this call, but there's a few basic action items I want each of you guys to be considerate of from this day forward. So many people are spending a lot of time, energy, attention on the what goes in. And that's maybe 50% of the equation, right? So again, I'm making up numbers, but what goes into your mouth is maybe 50% of the equation. But what your body does with what you eat is also 50% of the equation. And while we can absolutely influence what goes into our mouth, some people just neglect or forget about what happens once it passes into you. So, well, how did I prepare it? What was the state my body and mind was in when I ate it? Did I chew? What's the state of my stomach acid, my enzymes, and my microbiome? Am I paying attention to those things? And so I want each of you to be considerate of the fact that it doesn't take any more than a minute to breathe before you eat. It doesn't take any additional time to implement some type of additional chewing. Why is chewing important? Surface area. Two words, surface area, right? I'll answer that segment. So when I chew a steak, imagine I swallowed a piece of steak whole. only the outside of that steak is going to be exposed to the enzymes and acid. So a lot of that steak is going to pass through undigested. So while we eat 30 or 40 grams of protein, maybe we're only getting 10 or 15 grams of that as actual substrate into our blood. So we have to be considerate of, if I don't chew it all and expose all of the bits of steak to stomach acid and enzymes, it doesn't get broken down. So now all of a sudden I've got indigestion, I've got gas, I've got bloating, I've got putrid things coming out the back end, right? So you got putrefied solids inside of you, fermenting, not a good place to be. So start being more considerate of not just the foods that go into your mouth, but the state you're in when you're eating it. Is there any evidence of signs and steps of being out of function? And how do we tell where the dysfunction is? Symptoms, Matt. So the number one way objectively is to test, right? We can test your, what's called your metabolome. So your metabolome is the digestive end products of metabolism. And we can see which ones are excessive and which ones are deficient. And so with all of my level clients, and we can do this for everybody. If anyone wants to do metabolomics testing, we offer this at the within coaching. I do with all my clients. Gav does with all his clients. It's obviously an additional cost. You work with a nutritionist and a functional medicine practitioner on optimizing your metabolome and your microbiome. So yeah, we can do all these things. And it's just one, you're looking at, you can look at metabolomics. Two, if we don't want to do the testing, we can just look at symptoms. So if you're Matt, if you're having some issues, you can just do our metabolic assessment form. So if you want to ask your coach to send over the metabolic assessment based on symptoms, we can usually get a pretty good idea of what the interventions are. There's like three or four baseline interventions that would be like first line intervention, which we can talk about for most people. But rather than guessing, which I never like doing, let's base it on either testing or symptoms. Yeah. So if you guys are reading chat, Matt's put something great in there, which we got from a guy named Owen Lacey. Remember 5, 10, 15, 20. So what is five? Five deep breaths before starting your meal. 10 seconds between bites. 15 total minutes eating. Is that right? Yeah, minimum. And then a 20 minute walk post meal for digestion. 5, 10, 15, 20. Yeah, Matt, we can definitely do testing in Singapore. I've had a client there in the past. I've got a guy in New Zealand now. We definitely can do testing abroad. Yeah, just let us know, man. Happy to do it for you. Yeah, so guys, I don't want to spend a huge amount of time on this. I can answer any specific questions you have. There's an enormous number of potential factors, many of which are well within your control to improve your metabolism. Do you want to know the number one thing you can do to improve your metabolism, your metabolic function? You're already doing it. What is it? Move more. By far, move more. So there's a lot, though. Actually, I interviewed a guy today, which I thought was a phenomenal, like one of my favorite podcasts ever, maybe. And he has a framework on how to eat based on the immune system, which I thought was incredibly unique and insightful. His theory around body composition and metabolism passes through the lens of the immune system, which it should, because everything that we eat passes through the immune system. And he has a theory around, actually I have it written right here, nature's rhythms optimize. And you'll have to listen to the podcast to understand what that means. But nature's rhythms optimize, which means eating in synchronicity with nature's rhythms. So yeah, fascinating stuff. But there's a lot you can do to optimize your metabolism, no matter how fat you are, no matter how metabolically broken you are, no matter how old you are, how young you are. There's a lot you can do to reverse metabolic damage. Lots. And how many of you guys would say you have... this is a hard question for people to be honest with, but how many of you would say you have some type of dysregulated hunger signals, meaning sometimes you overeat or sometimes you can't control it, or sometimes you're stressed and you binge. Anybody have that? Yeah. And so almost all of that can be correlated back to the immune system. So when we think of like stress, you know how stress works ultimately? By influencing the immune system, and the immune system responds by releasing some inflammatory cytokines. And those inflammatory cytokines ultimately are signaling molecules. And those molecules ultimately cause dysregulation in other cells in the body, or some type of change in the regulation in cells in the body. It's all fascinating stuff. Too many nuances to maybe ever learn in one lifetime. What questions have you, gentlemen? Dom, what's your weight?
$175.
You look like a new human, dude. You're a legend. You're a legend. So happy for you, man. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great, but sometimes post meals, it's like I try to take a walk. And then later on, probably maybe like 30 minutes later, I'm like drowsy. So I have to step away from the computer and try to get some energy and that stuff. So,
you know, I think one thing you want to be considerate of, what I find is if you're outside walking and you're getting a lot of light and then you go into a home that's dark, that will be a very quick trigger for many people to sleep. It's very common because like the number one signal to you, your sleep wake cycles is light, right? And so if you're walking outside, it's bright, it's sunny. Also you come inside and it's like artificial light or it's dark. The brain goes, I want to sleep. It's very common. So there's a number of reasons, right? It could be your metabolism. It could be microbiome, but it could also just be light.
Interesting. Cause it happens like after I come back walking and then I start working, and then later I just feel like I get lightheaded and like feeling tired. So,
are you measuring your blood glucose?
Yeah. And the irony is, at the same time, the glucose spikes.
And it goes up or down?
Up. So I was saying that it gives me alert. Said your glucose is spiking up now. It's a good time to take a walk and that stuff. So.
After you're just taking a walk and then it spikes up?
It spikes up like 30 minutes later. So
strange. Interesting. That's really interesting. How high does it go afterwards, Dom?
I think like 20 and that stuff when it drops down. Because I usually get warnings when it's above a 20 and that stuff. So if it's it spikes up 20 points, then it says take a walk. Anything lower than that, it doesn't.
Sorry, it goes up to what number? 120?
No, up 20 points.
Where does it start? Like, so what's the highest? Like, give me the range. What's it starting at? What's it going to?
Starting around like in the 80s. So it goes up to 110, 115, and that stuff.
That shouldn't be bad. You shouldn't notice that. Like going from 80 to 120 even shouldn't be like maybe you feel a little bit different as far as blood pressure at 120, but I don't think you should feel significantly different when it's 120. That's interesting that you get sleepy. Most people get sleepy when it's coming down. Yeah. How hard is your walk? How intense is your walk?
Not intense enough. I just walk at like a normal pace, not like a high pace, but normal pace. So I could, because I have the Polar H10 and I'm using the app, I could next time measure the pace of my walk with that.
Well, your subjective perception matters too. Like, is it hard? Is it not hard? That matters.
Mild. Yeah. It's not very intensive.
Interesting. No. Can you try, Dom, to pay closer attention to how you're breathing on your walk? And see if you can increase the rate of breathing a little bit and see if that makes a difference. I'd be curious if you like regulated the breathing tempo. Maybe you did like a four in, four pause, four out, four pause, like a four box breath. and see if that influences it. Because there's a lot of things that could potentially influence blood sugar spikes. And I don't know, typically walking shouldn't be one of them. I don't know. It's interesting.
I'll monitor my breathing intake and that stuff. So
hopefully. Say that. One more time.
I'll monitor the breathing intake.
Yeah, do it. Yeah. Just obviously Gav's whiz when it comes to stuff. Just report back to him.
Yeah. I mentioned that to him. He says like maybe just breathe a little bit a while and then go for a walk and that stuff.
Are you wearing a CGM or are you testing with your finger?
No, CGM.
Yeah. You'll get there, man. You'll get there. All right. Gents, I want to be respectful of your time. Thank you very much for being here. Coaches, anything you guys want to wrap with?
No, thank you.
Appreciate you guys.
Thanks, everybody. Appreciate you guys being here. Do we provide some value for you today? Hopefully we did. As always, thanks for being here, guys. And we will see you all next week, same time. Everybody.